Welcome to Planet Marzipan Podcast,
your fish and Marillion podcast,
where we talk about all things in the planet of Marillion and fish. I'm Meza, and here's my mate,
Craig Houston. Are you recording?
I am now, yes.
It's time to play the music.
We are going to need some music. We're going to have to talk about that.
Why don't you get things started? Okay.
Right, okay. Welcome to Planet Marzipan, the Marillion Fish Podcast. This is our first real episode, and we thought we'd tackle something, you know, not controversial, lesser known album by the band. So we're going to start with Misplaced Childhood.
Yay!
We will be talking about the origins of the album, our personal thoughts on it. We're coming from different angles because how old were you when it came out, Craig?
Oh, I was about six. Yeah. Wait, no, I wasn't. Yeah. I was 13. 12, okay. 12, 13, 12, yeah. And to be fair, it was actually the album that opened my eyes to the existence of the band. My mate Ralph was a big fan of Script. He hated Fugazi, but loved Script. And he absolutely loved Misplaced. And the amount of plays he played it at me constantly, and don't get us wrong, I've really really enjoyed it, but it's not the album that got me into the band.
Okay,
but it sowed the seeds.
Okay,
but obviously you'd been a kind of hardcore fan years before, so I mean you'll have heard this when.
Well, I heard the early version of Side One on the Farewell to 84 tour. So I saw that tour at Manchester Apollo, and it was a really interesting night. The Cardiacs were support, and that they didn't go down particularly well with the prog crowd.
To be fair, though, I think in the Fish era, and obviously I wasn't around then, so I just from kind of hearsay and articles and things like that, traditionally, Marillion support bands didn't go down that well back in the day. Is that true?
It depends. I mean, the Cardiacs are very revered. You know, they're quite. I don't want this to be a Cardiacs podcast, but they're quite a quirky thing. You know, Tim, the main guy, they were all dressed in school uniforms. And Tim would smack them on the heads and stuff as though he was sort of disciplining them. And the music was quite staccato and a little bit, it wasn't punky, but it was a bit out there. And I remember in Manchester, Fish came on after about the third track and kind of said, you know, give him a chance. He had to come out during the set and speak to the crowd. The next song they played was a little bit more progressive and kind of got a better reaction. And then went back to this really jerky staccato stuff. It was a strange atmosphere. But the other thing that I take from that gig was I was so excited after hearing the initial version of Side One. You just felt the band were going to go somewhere with it. It was going to be their dark side. You just knew it from that early version.
Kind of a musical sea change, really.
It's a real step up in their song structures, and even their transitions were better.
And a different attitude as well.
Yeah, yeah. Shall we see what? Apologies to Tabletop Genesis, but shall we see what Wikipedia says about Misplaced Childhood?
Oh, you probably know more than what Wikipedia says.
No. Misplaced Child.
Mesopedia, I trust better than
I
Wikipedia.
wouldn't go there. Misplaced Child is the third studio album by the British neo-progressive band Marillion, released in 1985. It is a concept album loosely based on the childhood of Marillion's lead singer Fish, who was inspired by a brief incident that occurred while he was under the influence of LSD. The album was recorded during the spring of 1985 at Hanserton Studio in Berlin and produced by Chris Kimsey, who had previously worked with the Rolling Stones. Misplaced Child is the group's most commercially successful album to date, peaking immediately at number one in the UK charts and spending a total of 41 weeks on the chart. It ultimately gained platinum status. It features Marillion's two most successful singles, the guitar-led rock ballad Kaylee, which reached number two in the UK, and the piano-led Lavender, which peaked at number five. Misplaced Childhood was listed as the sixth best album of 1985 by Kerrang and chosen as the fourth greatest concept album of all time by Classic Rock in 2003.
So there.
There you go. So your view at the time was you weren't that enamored with the album. Is that what you kind of said?
No, I did like it, but to be fair, it that part of my life, music wasn't kind of that important. You know,
Right.
it was kind of,
Just girls.
yeah, obviously, you know, it's not, nothing changed there, but I don't know, where's the missus? But no, it wasn't I mean, really, for me, music didn't kind of like play such a big part in my life until I was like 17, 18. So this was a few years kind of previous. But I was aware of them, you know, I was aware of the songs. I mean, to be fair, I knew the album backwards even before I was a fan of it, because I said that it'd been played so much. And now, you know, I mean, one, it is an album that I do go back to quite frequently, and it's just so listenable all the way through. It's an album that you can actually play from start to finish quite happily without skipping, and just really enjoy. So when it came out, how excited were you? What was your kind of thoughts when you
It was a
actually
really, really exciting
got hold of
time.
the vinyl in your hand?
Well, even before that, it was a really exciting time to be into the band, you know. I'd seen them on a script tour, seen them on a Fugazi tour, and a Reel to Reel date, and then this Farewell to 84. Ian Mosley was firmly ensconced in the band now. They had a settled lineup, and they were just getting stronger and stronger. I got some real vivid memories about having the album on release day, and then the singles, you know, the singles being on Top of Pops, Kaylee being on Top of the Pops, people you could actually talk about Marillion and people would know who they were for the first time. It was just a massive sea change in being a fan of the band. On the Misplaced tour, I saw them at Sheffield. I saw them on the second leg at the NEC. I was lucky enough to go to the Webb fan club gig at the Marquee, where Fish had lost his voice. So you remember him doing Lavender with the notes? I think that was actually on TV last
Yeah, it's Top of
night.
the Pops, yeah.
But at the same time, on the 10th of September 85, they played the Marquee, and it was a Webb fan club gig, so you had to buy your ticket through the web. I think it was only about a tenner or something like that, and you got a, we didn't know this until we got there, you got a free t-shirt that said Misplaced Marquee on it, but Fish's voice was shot, so we just sang the words, really. It was a really great gig. It was just all of that. I remember listening to Misplaced on my Walkman on the way into London. And I was getting into London just as it was dusk, and the bit on Heart of Lothian where they talk about it's 6 o'clock in the tower blocks, I could just see all the tower blocks around me. I was so excited going into London for that gig. It's just a really good time, a really good time in my life. I was 21, so you know it's a really important point in my life, and it's a massive album for me. I have to say. it's a 45-minute piece of music now. I can't just select tracks out of it. It's you just play it start to finish. And certainly more so, we'll talk about it in a minute, but certainly more so with the Stephen Wilson 5.1 mix. I'm a big 5.1 fan. I love my surround mixes. We'll talk about that one in a minute, but even that's my preferred way of listening to it now is on the 5.1 mix.
Yeah, the funny thing, just thinking there, well, we both said you play it all the way through. It's 45 minutes, and it's just kind of like it started, finishes like, oh, where's it gone? But it reminds us back, because didn't EMI for a while have a sticker system where they actually put on the albums all killer, no filler?
Possibly, yeah.
I
I can't.
remember that. I do remember that all killer, no filler. And I'm positive I actually saw that misplaced with that
Yeah,
sticker.
fair enough. Yeah.
Somebody, if you've seen it, or if you remember it, or if I'm talking absolute bollocks, tell us. I'm positive I saw that way back when. But it shows your age.
So the it is just going back to the 84 version. I'm sure most people have heard that now. But the early version's really interesting. It's got Fish kind of made up scat lyrics for Kaylee at that point of the tour. They weren't fully formed. And I also listened to the demo yesterday, and the demo's got different lyrics to Kaylee on. So all the time that was sort of evolving, and the Rothery solo isn't the same. That solo on Kaylee isn't fully formed at that point either. So it's really interesting to have that those documents of it.
And I mean, they cover all this in the documentary on the Blu-ray. Things like, how many, there was very, very little overdubs, and a lot of stuff was kind of done in one take, and things like that, which is a completely different alien way for the way that people seem to record nowadays.
Well, the Warner's box, which is available as we speak at Racket.
To
It's
pre-order for October the 20th.
I'll take your word for that. Is the second reissue of the album. So there was a two disc reissue. I'm not sure when that was. He says reaching up to his collection. I can't reach that. There was a two disc reissue of the album with a second disc of B-sides and a full demo of the album.
Which was the is that the 24 bit remaster from the Best of Both Worlds series back in,
Yes, yeah.
that 1998, I think it was. It was 98.
Okay. That's the first reissue, and all of that content is actually included in the Warner's reissue. So the Warner's reissue is a 4 CD, 1 Blu-ray box. Disc one is the 2017 remaster of Misplaced Childhood. So this is the only Warner's box that doesn't feature a remix of the main album. It's just a remaster. And the reason for that is that Stephen Wilson said there was very little that wasn't used. So the way that Stephen normally works with his surround mixes is he creates a new stereo mix and then he creates a surround mix. He created the stereo mix of this and said it wasn't different enough to warrant issuing it. It's a very economic recording. They used most of the things that they recorded. The other discs in the box are disc two and three are live at Utrecht in 1985, which is a fantastic live set. It really is. There's a few starts with Emerald Lies intro. There's a few sort of feedback squeals on there, but other than that, it's really, really well recorded. Disc four is singles, B-sides, and versions. So the B-sides that were on the original and the 12-inch mixes that were on the original reissue, but there's also the Stephen Wilson stereo remix of Lady Nina, which is quite nice. And then the full Misplaced demos. And then disc five is the Blu-ray, which has the Stephen Wilson surround mix on it, which I'll talk about shortly. The Lady Nina surround mix, the Lady Nina stereo remix, the Misplaced 2017 remaster in 96:24 stereo, and then the documentary Childhood Memories, which I think it's really good. I remember getting the box, and as I do with all of these, the very first thing I play is the documentary.
I'm straight to it. As soon as I've got it, it's straight to the Blu-ray player.
I love Mr. H, but to see those five people back together, I just sat grinning the first time I watched the documentary. I was just grinning at the screen. There's some really good stories. They're sat being interviewed by Chris Kimms, with Chris Kimsey, sorry. As usual, Derek has a lot to say.
Shy and
Probably,
retirement type.
yeah, probably to the detriment of one or two of the quieter members of the band. I'm looking at you, Pete, there. But it's a really, really interesting documentary. Talks about the changes in how things changed for the band, you know, having a popular album. And the start of the divisions, I think, is talked about on there that sort of manifest themselves in the Clutching at Straws era. But yeah, it's a great documentary, as they all are, I have to say. But this
They are
kind of
the
set,
highlights of the Warners of the issues for me.
yeah, this kind of sets the tone for the documentaries going forward. What do you think to the 5.1, Craig? Have you played it much?
I don't do 5.1. I stick with stereo. I'm not set up for 5.1.
You've only got two ears.
I've only got 2 ears and half a grid, so
Okay.
it doesn't work for me. You're the audiophile of the both of us.
I just think it's to be sat in the middle of your favorite albums, and you are, when it's done really well, 5.1, you are right in the middle of the music that you love. This is quite subtle. For a Stephen Wilson remix, it's not that radical. He's done some really, really great remixes. This is, I don't know, conservative, I would say.
Do you think it's more reverential? He's not wanting to rock the boat too much
Maybe.
with it, or he's kind of, but is it not just saying that it was great as it was and there's not much more he could have actually added to it?
Yeah, I mean, there's things. I had it on this morning. There are little things that sort of jump out that you think, well, I've not heard that before, or I don't recall that from the original. They were probably there, but they're a bit buried in the mix, probably, you know. Pseudo Silk Kimono's got some sounds and effects that I don't remember sort of hearing. Pete's bass is really nice, and I recall it's in one of the back speakers during that. Lavender is the same, you know. Pete just kind of stands out. It's as though he's been really brought up in the mix. Bittersweet starts with the sort of ethereal effects, but there's a bell tolling that I really don't remember from the original. You know, it's off in the left-hand back speaker, and it's so clear. Hatalovian, that solo, that Rothery solo, has a fantastic Kelly keyboard riff underneath it that
You didn't know it was there beforehand.
it just didn't stand out because Rothers was doing his stuff. And there's, you know, there's the it's Fish's vocal is in the center speaker all through the album, which is fine, but then there are times when they use the back speakers to emphasize backing vocals, that sort of thing. The bass pedals at the end of Heart of Lothian, the bit where and the man from the magazine wants another shot, that bit, the bass pedals are just really good, really deep. It just brings out certain things, you know. Waterhole, when Ian goes right round the kit, it kind of pans through the speakers.
So it actually feels like a proper surround kind of all.
Yeah, at times it's not, you know, if you're into your surround mixes, you'll know there are some fantastic ones out there. This is good, it's just not earth-shattering. Lords of the Backstage has Fish backing vocals in the rear speakers. Blind Curve, Just a Runaway, the echo on Just a Runaway is round the back speakers as well. I could go on. It's a fantastic mix, and it's my preferred way of listening to the record now. It's my go-to. And it does sound great in surround. But if you put that with the documentary, that on its own for me is worth the price of entry. Those two things together are just brilliant.
Oh, it's it's a great package, and it's good for them, for people who've missed out, to be able to get a chance to kind of reorder it again without paying like £100 plus, or like $150 or whatever it's kind of going for around the world.
This is the second time that that's been repressed, though.
Yeah, and it's just
It's
it's. There's obviously going to be a demand for it, and the same thing will happen. These will sell out, and in about a year or so's time, prices will creep up again, and there'll be demand for another reissue. But a thousand copies isn't a lot.
No,
Not at
not at
all.
all. I mean, the other thing that I want to touch upon is in our first of our Just for the Record feature is
Out with the vinyls.
the vinyl version of the box. Yes. So it's in a really, I mean, this is, if you haven't got it, I'm sorry, it's not available anymore. It is really well constructed. The box is lovely and really sturdy, but the inner sleeves, the main album has a Hansa Studios, a mock-up of the Hansa Studios tape box on it. It's really nice. I'm sure it's Craig now. You can't see this, obviously, but I'm sure it's a Craig now. It's really nice, handwritten. It's just a facsimile. And then the live discs have got facsimiles of Ampex tape boxes.
Which is really cool. It's
It's
really,
really
really cool.
good, and they are, or they appear to be, the real tape box replicated. They've got notes written on them, tone reel, that sort of thing. Just really nicely done. And it's all on 180 gram vinyl as well.
So what does it actually sound like? You've obviously got your original vinyl.
Yeah.
So the album on vinyl with this version, this kind of
It's
remastered
just a
version.
remaster. It's the 2017 remaster. So it's never sounded bad on vinyl to me. The actual album itself sounds like the other reissues, the 2013. It wasn't a remaster, but it was a heavyweight vinyl reissue. That sounds nice. The album itself doesn't sound fantastically different, I would say. The live discs are great in this, and it's just a really nice. I mean, obviously, the booklet is in 12-inch format. So what you get in the 60-page booklet in the CD and the Blu-ray format is in 12-inch format. And again, it's a glossy booklet. It's just really nicely done.
Now, speaking of the vinyl, you're talking about this version and the 2013 version. There was also the AMI 100 version from
Yes.
1997, which is like rarer than hen's teeth. I mean, I never saw it in the shops, like
It
anywhere.
is on Discogs. I think I've actually got it on my wish list on Discogs. Let's see how much it's going for.
Because that came out kind of round about the time of Best of Both Worlds, didn't it?
I'll take your word for it. I don't remember it happening
It
because
was one that it was one of those things that I didn't realize, or didn't actually know it was out till after it was actually out, and then it wasn't I never actually saw it in a record shop, never saw it anywhere.
No. I wasn't buying vinyl at that point. I kind of, it says it's 1997 on Discogs.
Yeah, it was from 97 because it was part of AMI 100.
Last sold on the 5th of September 2023 for £75.83.
That's cheaper than I thought. That's cheaper than I thought for such a rarity.
As currently, as we recording today, there's copies on there from Greece at £130, Germany at £80. There's a copy from the UK at 75 plus postage. So they're different prices,
So I think
These
the
are all.
price might have actually came down since there's more versions available now.
Yeah, it's it, they've got hype sticker on it saying EMI 100, the first centenary. Vinyl collection, classic LPs, original packaging, virgin vinyl, 180 gram pressing, heavy quality sleeves, cut analog cutting from analog tapes. So, it's
So to go from something like these, which are going for kind of like hundreds of pounds, I mean, I dread to think what the current box set price is for this Warner reissue, is going back to the controversial, I would say, version that came out free CD with the Daily Mail.
Oh yeah, that was good, wasn't it?
That was a time where the Daily Mail were kind of pumping out, was it like an album once, like a classic album once a week?
There was a series of
I think
80s albums, so I think the Human League and things like that, Heaven 17 were in it.
so that was a period of time where there was thousands of copies of Misplaced Childhood flying around for nothing really. So I
Yeah.
wonder if that kind of managed to pique a few people's curiosity back in the day.
Maybe. I mean, difficult to say. I mean, we were still into the band, but it was a really cheap way of getting the album, certainly.
I mean, this is obviously before kind of streaming and before the way that people are kind of ripping stuff off.
I'm just checking on here. So the 2 CD reissue was 1998.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was actually released on the same day. It was the same day as Brave, because they did them in batches of two.
Right. I don't know. I'd have to check that. I wouldn't want to be wrong on that, so I couldn't really say.
Ah, we'll edit it out. We'll edit it out.
I'm trying to find that the Daily Mail one, but and I was going to have a look and see how much the vinyl box is going for at the minute, but
Think the Daily Mail thing might have been around about, I think, 2008 or something, 2010. It was before streaming became popular.
the tour itself was probably, well, was definitely Marillion's biggest production up to that point.
It was the first time that they ever kind of played like the NEC or
Yeah, that was on the
anything
second
big.
leg of the tour. Yeah, they did the theatres on the first leg, the usual sort of theatres. I saw them in Sheffield on that leg.
So they actually went from kind of smaller venues to the like theatre style venues, the kind of size venues that are playing now quite quickly in their career.
Yeah.
Because they were playing things like the City Halls and stuff like that back on like Fugazi and things like that. So it's.
Yeah.
So what was your favourite gig on that tour?
Well, back then, I mean, I didn't have my own transport, so I was only kind of doing one or two on a tour, if I'm honest. I really enjoyed Sheffield. The NEC was great to see because, again, you felt the band was kind of going up a level, and that I'm pretty sure they sold that gig out, which was again, it just felt like our band were kind of going up a level. Fish was in full flow with his introductions and really wordy. And the bigger stages meant they were further apart. So, what we gained in one respect, you kind of lost in another respect. We now know this was the start of the journalists and people sort of singling out Fish as the front man and the main person.
It was the first time they really got any kind of like media attention, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I mean, it was only really between kind of like Misplaced and Into Clutching where the press kind of took any kind of notice of them. After and before them, they were pretty much out
I'm
there.
just checking now. The NEC gig was in December 85, 19th of December 85. So it was a really, that was a culmination of the end of the first year of Misplaced. So they'd gone up a level there.
And then between Misplaced and Clutching was the garden party at Milton Keynes.
That was a hot day. Did you go to that?
Long before my time.
Okay.
I was still in short pants.
That was a really good day. I remember distinctly waiting for the coach to pick me up in York, and we went on a coach trip, and they were collecting us from the Cenotaph in York. It was the same day as Wham! The final was at Wembley, So you got a group of Wham fans and a group of Murillo fans all waiting for these coaches at the same time. But the bill itself was great. I really enjoyed it. You had Jethro Tull, Gary Moore, Mama's Boys, Magnum. Really good bill. Really good bill. And a blistering hot day. So hot. There was no shade in the Milton Keynes Bowl at all. But yeah, great memories of that gig. Again, they're just going up another level at this point. I really enjoyed Tull that day. I'd not really heard a lot of Tull at that point. So Jethro Tull went down well. Gary Moore was great. It was a really nice day. Great day. Well, what do you think of Misplaced Childhood? We'd be really interested to know. What do you think of the, what's your take on the Warners reissue of it?
I do think that the Warners reissue is brilliant. The live stuff sounds fantastic. The remaster itself is fine. I wouldn't say, like you said, I wouldn't say it's groundbreaking. It's a nice sound to it. The Blu-ray, I love. The documentary is fantastic. Keep using fantastic. And it does set the way for the rest of them. 5.1, nothing for me. But I do like the fact that for completists on the Blu-ray, that is the original mix as well.
Yeah.
So from there you can kind of get it. It's as the start of the of these reissues, it's a great one for out the gate. It really is. And long may they continue to do these post-Warners, because
Yeah. I mean the book the book is really great. The CD Blu-ray comes in a hardback book. It's got a really nice textured sleeve. It's a great print of the cover, and the booklet in it's in the book as well is really substantial.
yeah, sleeve notes are good.
Yeah, the whole thing is absolutely recommended, and they've kept the standard up for the rest of them. I have to say, changed the format slightly, but we'll talk about that in future episodes. But yeah, it's definitely one of my top 10 albums of all time,
Ah,
without.
definitely,
Without a doubt,
definitely.
it means such a lot to me and still does to this day. But as you say, you put it on and the time passes like that. You know, the album's over before it's begun. It's so ingrained now.
And the
It's a
thing is
fantastic.
any time either Marillion or Phish play any parts of Misplaced in their live set, always goes down a storm. Always.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And I think it's telling as well with the Rothery band that he's gone back and is playing Misplaced in his current set and
I
playing
think
it well.
he enjoys it. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So, look, there are our thoughts on Misplaced and particularly the reissue. Let us know what you think. Let us know what you think of the podcast. There'll be some notes below as to how to get in touch with us. And that's it from me.
And that's it from me.
Take care. Stay alive.
Take care. Thanks for listening to Planet Marzipan Podcast. Please like and subscribe from whichever platform you get your podcasts from. You can contact us at planetmarzipanpodcast@gmail.com and check out marillion.com, fishmusic.scot or fishmusic.eu for all the good stuff.